All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a Q&A episode where I will be answering your Falcons listener questions, including whether or not the Falcons need to be shopping for a new backup quarterback.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong, however, on Twitter at FalcFans. And, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode of Locked On Falcons is presented by tonight's Locked On Fantasy Live show. For those of you that have fantasy football questions that you need answered before your draft, don't miss Locked On Fantasy Live tonight on Wednesday, August 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern, streaming live on the Locked On NFL YouTube page. Subscribe now so that you don't miss it. Our stable of fantasy experts will answer your questions live, or you can submit them ahead of time. You still got time on Twitter to Locked On Network. Again, that's at Locked On Network on Twitter. So today's episode is a Q&A episode where we'll be starting things off touching upon the roster move that the Falcons made on Tuesday with waiving wide receiver Jeff Badet with an injury settlement. We'll talk about the second unofficial depth chart and what changes or lack of changes occurred on that before we get into the Q&A portion of today's episode, in which we will spend quite a bit of time talking about the Falcons offensive line and why they have not been able to have as much success, addressing that position really over the last decade. In addition to whatever issues they have going on currently, then we'll sort of talk about the quarterback situation, at least behind Matt Ryan, talk about Josh Rosen as a possibility that a lot of people think the Falcons should go after, and whether, you know, AJ McCarron, that will give us an opportunity to talk about whether he can hack it as the team's number two quarterback. We'll talk about the best case scenario for the Falcons this upcoming season in 2021. And then we have a listener question about past Falcons backups that were, at least in my eyes, better than the starters ahead of them. And that will allow me to bring up two of my old favorites from the Mike Smith era of sort of guys that were outshining, were too low on the Mike Smith era depth charts. So without further ado, let's get into the current depth chart, which the Falcons dropped today on Tuesday as I'm recording this. And there really were no changes other than sort of removing the players that the Falcons have cut over the past week and some very minor cosmetic things. I did get my hands on some All-22 film earlier today. Thanks. Shout out to the person. He knows who he is that hooked me up with that from that game. And, you know, I plan on going through that with a fine-tooth comb over the next 48 hours. And hopefully we'll be posting the quote-unquote actual depth chart on a Google Doc for you guys to see. And, of course, you can follow me on FalcFans and I'm Locked On Falcons to see me post that at some point. You know, the goal is to get it up before Saturday. So hopefully we'll meet that goal. But I'm not great with deadlines. So let's talk about the transaction that the Falcons made on Tuesday, waiving wide receiver Jeff Badet with an injury settlement. And I said on yesterday's episode that, you know, when later in the summer I would get the chance to talk about injury settlements and whatnot, and I thought I would have a few more weeks to sort of nail down the research exactly, because I only have a vague understanding of this, how injury settlements work. But basically, as I understand it, you're not really allowed to cut an injured player, but you can sort of reach a settlement with a player, which basically functions as sort of a severance package for an injured player that basically allows them to get paid a certain amount of money while they recover over the span of weeks or months from whatever their current injury that ails them. And it technically, I think, opens the door for that player to return at a later date. But as far as I know, that's relatively a rare occurrence. Usually when a player gets an injury settlement, they're kind of done. Teams don't necessarily always revisit it. I'm sure there are examples in the past, but none that really come to mind, especially with the Falcons. I'm sure the Patriots did it back in like 2002 or something like that. And for those of you that need to remind you who Badet is, he was a player that got hurt early in camp. He was a post-draft signing. You know, I had expectations for him potentially pushing for a roster spot as one of the few Falcons at the Falcons wide receivers that they had in camp that had legit deep speed. And that could be considered sort of a deep threat. Although when you look at Bidette's time in the NFL working in the preseason with teams like Minnesota in the past, as well as some time in the XFL, at least his production as a deep threat was not particularly great to think that, you know, he had ideally live up to those expectations. And so the lack of a deep threat is still a concern for me. You know, I really want to have a receiver that can really take the top off of a defense that will really make this offense really click and go. But I kind of know I kind of stand alone on that island because I don't necessarily perceive Olamide Zaccheaus as a deep threat. Certainly he's capable of making deep plays as we've seen, you know, the four times it's happened over the last 2 years. But I don't think that's something that you can consistently rely on for him to be able to provide for your offense week in and week out. I don't see Frank Darby as a deep threat, despite the fact that that was his primary role in college. But I don't think that's going to translate well to the NFL. I don't see Russell Gage as a deep threat. And while Calvin Ridley certainly has made a number of plays over the last 3 years down the field, they tend to be more of those sort of comebacks, corners, and out patterns that are sort of accentuated by his route running ability rather than necessarily him having that sort of take the top off the defense speed. You know, no one's complaining about Calvin Ridley being able to do the things that he does do in terms of the vertical routes that he runs, but I just want a guy that can sort of run that deep post and really blow the top off of the defense. And I don't know if the Falcons have that receiver right now. And I suspect, at least at this current time, unless I wind up being wrong about some of these players that we're talking about, you know, I think we'll probably look to next offseason to try to acquire that as part of, you know, a overarching process to basically, hopefully next year, the Falcons will start filling in some of the holes that they have currently on the team once they are basically getting through this season. And we'll touch upon a little bit of that later in the episode. But as we move forward on today's episode, we're going to get in to the Q&A portion of today's episode and really focus in on why the Falcons offensive line, quote unquote, can't get right, and the mistakes that the Falcons seemingly keep making over and over, not only looking at Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Smith and Dan Quinn's record there, but, you know, whether or not Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot are also making some of those same mistakes. And we'll sort of get into that on today's episode. But, you know, in addition to the fantasy advice that you're going to get on tonight's live show on the Locked On NFL YouTube page, you guys want to also get that fantasy advice from Locked On Fantasy Football host Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News. He's going to give you that daily edge that, as you get beyond tonight's live show, that is going to help you consistently show up each week and help you win your league so that your fantasy squad never fails. Subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Football podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline gives you the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, and there's no time like now to get started at BetOnline. College and pro football are just around the corner, and you got NBA Summer League, and of course, baseball season is in full swing, and you track all the action at BetOnline. Get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Do you think Arthur Smith is going to win Coach of the Year, Matt Ryan MVP, Kyle Pitts Offensive Rookie of the Year? You can bet on that with BetOnline. You can even bet on the over-unders on how many yards and touchdowns you'll see from Falcons like Ryan Pitts, Mike Davis, Calvin Ridley, and Russell Gage. To get in on that action, just head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That means if you deposit $200, you get $100 in free money to play with that promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So before we get into the Q&A portion, I do want to acknowledge this on the podcast. The Falcons announced that they are the first NFL team yesterday that is fully vaccinated, with 100% vaccinated. That news dropped yesterday. I don't necessarily have any profound takes on it. I am certainly a big believer and supporter in people, as many people getting vaccinated as possible. I think objectively, once you quote unquote do your own research and start to weigh the pros and cons of getting the vaccine, the pros far outweigh the cons. And then when you put that up against the pros and cons of not getting the vaccine, you know, the cons certainly outweigh the pros. in that regard. And so from my perspective, it's a no-brainer, which I routinely reiterate when I'm dunking on anti-vaxxers on Twitter. But I'm not going to do that on the podcast. So I'm proud that the Falcons were the leaders in the proverbial clubhouse in getting their players vaxxed up when, you know, we talked at the beginning of camp. They had several players that went on the list, and we wondered, based off of some comments that Arthur Blank made, that whether or not those players were the ones that did not get vaccines, and whether or not, you know, subsequently they were decided, look, we're going to, even though some of us may have had COVID, we're going to still do our thing. So congratulations to the Falcons, certainly something worthy of congratulating them on. But, you know, that's way too much positivity in the direction of the Falcons. And so let's get into the Q&A portion and really dunk on this team in terms of their bad decisions. The past, and we'll start there with Jeff Van Gundy's burner, the first of Jeff's Van Gundy's questions at Jeff Van Gundy's B1 on Twitter. He asks, why can't we just get our damn O-line figured out? And I think a lot of this, Jeff, or Mr. Van Gundy, if you prefer, is owed to poor valuations and poor development over the years. And, you know, it goes back a decade. It probably goes back beyond that. But let's just focus on the last decade, with starting with the decision in 2011 to pay Justin Blaylock and let Harvey Dahl walk. And never really adequately replacing Dahl for a number of years. And you can say that went all the way up to Chris Lindstrom in 2019. And then, you know, in 2012, whiffing on draft picks like Peter Kahn and Lamar Holmes. And then in 2013, you know, overpaying Sam Baker. And it seemed like they started to get things on track in 2014 with the selection of Jake Matthews and signing John Asamoah. But then Asamoah basically got hurt after 1 year and didn't do that. Then in 2015, they bring in Dan Quinn. They sign a whole bunch of sort of replacement level players like Mike Person. They hire Chris Morgan to be the offensive line coach. And I think really that hurt them because they really struggled to develop the young talent that they did bring in those early years, and tended to rely heavily on older veteran players and didn't invest premium picks at the offensive line position basically from 2015 to 2018. And that's not a inherently bad strategy. It's a perfectly fine strategy, but ideally you still want to be developing guys behind those older veteran players. And that failed thanks to Morgan, in my humble opinion. That's evidenced by the fact that we've seen several young players that the Falcons did try to develop in those years, players like Daniel Brunskill and Wes Schweitzer, and even Jake Rogers, who the Falcons drafted in 2015 and cut. You know, they blossomed after they left Atlanta, and maybe blossom is overly a strong term, but, you know, they did improve to a point that several of them have since leaving Atlanta been counted on to at the very least be competent stopgap starters for other teams. And then, of course, that builds to the debacle that we saw in the 2019 free agent period, where they signed, you know, paid a lot of money for guys that really didn't fit the system in James Carpenter and Jamon Brown, and then seemingly got things right, at least in my opinion, drafting Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry. But unfortunately, even when you get those offensive line picks right, offensive linemen take time to develop. And it, oftentimes it's the better part of 3 years. And obviously this is hindsight, but, you know, in order for the Falcons to have a good offensive line in 2019 and 2020, you kind of needed to draft guys in like 2017 and in 2016 and 2017, which they did with selections like Wes Schweitzer and Sean Harlow. But those guys probably, even if the team was better at developing players, you know, were at best going to be serviceable starters, not real difference makers up front. And of course, all of this lies at the feet of Thomas Dimitroff. And we'll sort of see if Hennessy, you know, his lingering legacy is that he at least left one capable starter beyond Lindstrom and potentially McGarry with Matt Hennessy. But, you know, when we look at this current regime, the new regime, you know, I'm not as convinced that they're off to a better start than Dimitroff was, with selections like Jalen Mayfield and a free agent signing like Josh Andrews this past offseason. You know, I do like Drew Dolman as a player, but I'm not sure he's going to be massively better than what Hennessy is going to provide, should Hennessy not necessarily prove to be that answer at the center position. And so without going too much into the Mayfield stuff, you know, to me, my personal assessment of Mayfield as a prospect is he's kind of in the same boat as players like Brown and Carpenter. I just don't think he's a great scheme fit, even as at his position that is his quote unquote more natural position, of guard versus tackle. And even with the expectation that he will be better than Josh Andrews, which I think is a fair and understandable expectation. I don't necessarily, you know, I often say better does not always equal good. And so I feel like for me, my expectation with this left guard position is that it's going to be a position that the Falcons are going to feel compelled to revisit next offseason. And the problem is that spending more draft capital, more cap space on this offensive line is going to be less draft capital and less cap space that the Falcons can devote to other necessary positions. And, you know, I think contrary to the opinion of some, I just don't think the talent level of this current team is up to par. They can certainly get you through this season, but it's not built for sustainable success. This is not necessarily a core team that I think you're going to be able to win with year in and year out. You're going to have to make major overhauls to the talent level and major upgrades to the talent level of this team, right? And so they're going to need significant investments in draft, in free agency over the next couple of years to really get this team competing at a high level. Otherwise, you know, the only real choice is that this coaching staff, which is why I believe it's critical, this coaching staff either then has to, if that's not the case, this coaching staff has to prove that they can really quickly develop guys and or essentially make lemonade out of lemons. And really get the most out of this talent level. And again, I'm not necessarily trying to be doom and gloom when I say this, but I don't necessarily think a lot of fans appreciate the sort of precarious situation and or crossroads that the team is kind of at. And in this situation could get a lot more tenuous moving forward if things don't go quickly, correctly for this team. And, you know, again, this is not me necessarily predicting that it's all going to come crashing down, but it could. But, you know, I think we're going to be in a situation where we're going to have to see positive results for this franchise sooner versus later, or else we're going to be in a situation 3 years from now where we're going to be basically doing the complete rebuild that a lot of people advocated for the team to do this past offseason. And this regime, at least this coaching staff, is probably not going to be around to stick, you know, for the ride. It's going to be somebody else brought in to do that rebuild. And we'll see if Terry Fontenot is also around for that. And I think that's why this Fields versus Pitts conversation is going to continue to linger as much as you guys don't want it to. It's not going to go away anytime soon. And, you know, we're going to be looking, to me, we're in a precarious situation where we're set up where we're going to be looking, you know, 3 to 5 years down the road saying, looking back and saying, you know, this regime was able to successfully build a consistent winner with Pitts as a core piece. Or we're going to be 3 to 5 years from now basically doing the rebuild and wondering, why did we delay that process? Why didn't we just start doing that in 2021? And why did we waste the last 3 to 5 years? And again, I'm not trying to make it seem like the decision to draft Fields versus Pitts is the thing that will determine that. I've said all offseason long that I don't think this is that one selection is going to make or break that outcome, that path, either path that the Falcons go down, but that decision is going to personify that, right? Where if we're looking, again, if we're a successful team, we're going to say, oh, Pitts was the right pick, right? But if we're not a successful team, we're going to look back and probably, again, unless Fields completely falls flat on his face, we're going to sit here and say, oh, we should have taken the quarterback. Oh, we should have taken the Fields. And so it's not to say that pick will sort of single-handedly had guided us down either one of those paths, again, because there's going to be 30 moves between now and then that are going to determine whether or not the Falcons are going to help determine whether or not the Falcons are going to have success. And that draft selection was just one out of 30 moves. But it is going to be the sort of overarching narrative of being like, these were the two paths that the team could have gone down, and did we choose the right path? And so that's why this is not going away anytime soon. So you might as well as much embrace it rather than trying to fight it. But we have more questions to answer on today's episode, including about Josh Rosen and the Falcons' backup quarterback situation. But if you have questions about what's going on in the NBA Summer League, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered with a daily podcast devoted to your favorite squad, including the Atlanta Hawks. Check out the Locked On Hawks podcast or your favorite team's daily podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Did you guys know that Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market, has several delicious flavors? Whether you're a fan of coconut almond like me, or you prefer mint brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel, coconut or raspberry, there's something for everyone. And there's also occasional limited time flavors, like summer flavors like orange and strawberry. You can try them all with a mix box. And you'll want to, in order to get that healthy snack that tastes just like a candy bar that has none of the guilt. Built Bars contain 100% real chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. My favorite, the coconut almond, tastes just like an Almond Joy. But it's not just about their great taste. They're healthy too. They're low in sugar, low in calories, high in protein, high in fiber. And right now you can take advantage of the Built Bar Factory Second Sale, where you can get a box of your favorite flavor, even some limited time ones for a reduced price. And you can get even more savings once you head over to Built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. So Falcoholic Matt asks, what question is Josh Rosen the answer to? Well, Matt, that question is, which currently available player the Falcons shouldn't sign? You know, I will never understand people's obsession with reclamation projects. And for those that don't know, Josh Rosen, the former first round quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, was cut by the 49ers today, which now makes them the fourth team that has dumped him in basically the last 2.5 years. You know, that to me is telling you all you need to know about whether or not he's a viable reclamation project. Basically, three teams have now tried to reclaim him after that initial failure in Arizona that we all thought was, oh, it's just a bad situation in Arizona. And then we said, okay, well, the Miami situation was bad because they had a terrible offensive line, which is fair. All right. You know, though Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't have any problem, you know, being productive behind that offensive line. But, you know, Tampa Bay and San Francisco, you know, two teams with good offensive coaches in a situation where he's not being thrust onto the field in a bad situation. And both teams are like, yeah, we're good. You know, 6 months, we're good. And I don't for the life of me understand why people believe the Falcons should become the fourth team. I mean, I know it's related to their current quarterback situation, which we'll touch upon in a second, but I think this is just a classic case of people, you know, this is why I tend to be very condescending towards draft Twitter people, because they kind of refuse to look in the mirror and just say that they were wrong about a player. Like I was the king of the Josh Rosen's QB1. You can go back and listen to 2018 episodes where I was talking with Mark Schofield and I was proudly shouting at the top of my lungs that Josh Rosen was the best quarterback in this draft. He was going to be the next Matt Ryan, all these various things back in 2018. But watching him play, he's just not good, right? We missed. I will never understand the people that fall in love with these reclamation projects and just basically will ignore 3 years of data that tells you that this guy is not good. But because 3 years ago, back when, you know, we have 3 years of this guy going up against NFL level competition and not being good. But 4 years ago, he went against non-NFL competition. And that is much more informative about what this guy is capable of at this other level than the 3 years of this guy struggling against NFL caliber players. This was the same argument that people made for Laquon Treadwell and Charles Harris, as well as however many other reclamation projects the Falcons tried to take advantage of over the last couple of years. And I just do not understand why people refuse to look in the mirror and just say, hey man, I was wrong. And instead of trying to come up with excuses and trying to prove yourself right and say, oh, you know, I always believed that Josh Rosen was going to make it, just to basically learn from your mistakes and just say, hey, I got this wrong. Look at the film, figure out why you got it wrong and be better, rather than trying to die on a hill about a player that just basically has been terrible when he's been on the football field and in two ideal situations in Tampa Bay and San Francisco, washed out. Like, I don't get it. But, you know, Tiago Harley Jarvis at Falcon Outboy asks, what's your preference and what's your prediction for the 2021 Falcons quarterback room? And my preference is I really don't care. And I know that sounds weird to say, but the only horse I have in the Falcons quarterback race is that Matt Ryan plays really well this season, but I could care less who's behind him in the quarterback room. They could literally sign a horse, right, as my horse in the race to be the Falcons backup quarterback. And I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. Whatever. Right. You know, get Mr. Ed in there. As far as my prediction goes, you know, Ryan obviously will be the starter until until Matt Schaub comes off the top rope, comes out of retirement, throws him off the top of the steel cage in the tables, ladders, and chairs match in the next WWE pay-per-view. No, I'm joking. Ryan will, of course, be the starter. AJ McCarron will be the backup, and Felipe Franks will be the third string guy on the practice squad. I know McCarron was not good on Friday. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he was good on Friday, but I don't think people need to overreact and panic about the Falcons' backup quarterback. You know, I can sit here, and dozens of people told me when I tweeted, had the audacity to tweet about Justin Fields over the weekend, don't overreact to one preseason game. You know, people should be taking their own advice on that and don't overreact, because y'all did the same thing with Matt Schaub in 2019, right? You know, basically all AJ McCarron does has to get us through this season. And right, and then we can revisit the quarterback position next offseason. We don't have to look for these long terms, you know, oh, we're going to get Josh Rosen. Oh, we're going to get our Matt Ryan era. No, you're not, man. You just need to get through the season, guys. That's the story of this entire 2021 Falcons team. It's basically a whole bunch of stopgaps, a couple of stars, a bunch of stopgaps, a bunch of replacement level players. And all you're just trying to do is get through the season, be the best possible team that you can possibly be this season, and get us through 2021 so that we can get to 2022 and actually potentially make some real moves and start to make some real moves that can really put this team on a path of some permanent success. That's all we're trying to do. Just trying to get through this year. Jeff Van Gundy's Burners next question is best case scenario for the Falcons in 2021. Of course, speaking of which, you know, basically your best case scenario in this stopgap season is that they have an extremely healthy year, where basically we're looking at the metrics and saying, man, they had almost no injuries this upcoming season so that their depth is not exposed. And Matt Ryan takes the Arthur Smith's offense like Ryan Tannehill does and winds up putting up, you know, MVP caliber numbers like Tannehill did last year, and we can definitively say that Arthur Smith has proven himself without a doubt to be one of the best offensive minds in the league, and he's put in the pantheon of guys like Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid. And of course, Dean Pease winds up living up to the expectations that he's that magician that everybody claims that he's going to be able to do and just magically, you know, make this defense into a top 15 unit. And then that results in a Falcons team that's an 11 or 12 win team and manages to do sort of similar to what Matt LaFleur did in 2019 with Green Bay and win a bunch of close games. The Packers were 9-1 in one score games that year, similar to what Kevin Stefanski did last year in his quote unquote turnaround of Cleveland, where they had a 7-3 record in one score games. And then that leads to the Falcons, you know, making the playoffs as like a 2 seed, beating, let's say, Seattle in round one, and then beating the Packers in round two, and then probably, like, I don't know, losing to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And we're sitting here going, oh my God, I can't believe what a run by this Falcon team and under a first year coach. That to me is the best case scenario. So our last question comes from Devin Rucker. He sent in an email. I'm a strong believer in the theory that we as fans have yet to see the best individual player start at every position of football for various reasons. Who from the Falcons roster do you believe were better than their first string counterparts from the past decade? Vance Walker was the first player to jump to mind when I read this email at first, because I felt like despite the fact that he was playing behind Corey Peters from 2010 to 2012, Walker was the better player when he was on the field. And then once Walker left, I thought Peters started to live up to the billing as being the solid starter that he was in 2013 and 2014, and certainly was more legitimately deserving of all the playing time that he was getting. But I think, you know, in the 3 years prior to that, I felt like Vance Walker was the second best D tackle on the team besides Jonathan Babineau for much of Peter's early run. And of course, you know, I have to mention James Stone is part of my brand, who I thought was better than Mike Person that 2015 season. I do believe that if Stone had been the starter, the Falcons probably would have won at least a couple more games and potentially made the playoffs as a wild card team. And I remember specifically a moment early that season, I think it was around the Houston Texans game, where the Falcons had just beat the brakes off of the Texans. And the other podcast that I used to do, Falcon Central Radio, where we would often do mailbags pretty much every week. And a listener sent in a question to myself and my co-host at the time, Scott Karasik, about our thoughts on Mike Person. And Scott was generally positive on Person's performance up to that point and saying, hey, he outperformed expectations. And, you know, I remember saying I wasn't that impressed by what I was seeing on the film at that time. And, you know, I think the next week Person got hurt against Washington. Stone stepped in for like the second half of that game. I thought played really well in that game. And then he got the start against New Orleans the following week, and minus the infamous butt fumble, butt snap that he had in that game, I thought he played really well in that Saints game. And unfortunately, that snap, that bad snap, was the only thing that people noticed or saw from James Stone. And of course, you know, he was infamous from there on, and he was trash from there on. And very similar dynamic. Of course, you know, it's the Saints, it's the biggest rival. It's similar to what we saw, you know, fans basically writing off Brian Poole after whiffing on that tackle of Drew Brees at the beginning of 2018, despite the fact that Brian Poole wound up playing really well for the Falcons in the second half of that season, and then went on to sort of build off of that over the next couple of years with the Jets, and is now in New Orleans, of all places, and hopefully they won't reap the benefits of his play this upcoming season. But those of you that, you know, follow me on Twitter know that, you know, a defining part of my brand is being hashtag Team James Stone. The reason why I cling so much to that, you know, that shtick, so to speak, is that because it represents sort of how I often feel, where I'm this guy on an island and sort of the only person that knows the truth, right? You know, Alex Jones syndrome, you know, the truth is out there. You just got to find it. But, you know, I feel like for a long time, particularly in those years in particular, where I was, you know, one of a few individuals that was regularly watching film. And, you know, I think a lot of people claimed that they were watching film at that time, but we really weren't. And like, so watching the film, I'm like, this guy is secretly good, while the rest of the fan base sort of sees him as terrible, often due to one player. Right. And I think James Stone really represents that. And that's related somewhat to AJ McCarron. I'm not going to necessarily stake my rep on or my brand on AJ McCarron like I did with James Stone, since in general, I don't think AJ McCarron's that good of a quarterback, but I think he's fine. Right. And he'll get us through this season as the QB2, and then we can move on in future. And, you know, it's not a situation with McCarron like it was with James Stone, where I think he was secretly good this past Friday night. But I feel like most of McCarron's issues were relatively easy things that can be cleaned up, which is why I'm not necessarily overreacting to that one game. You know, I think you put better receivers and better blocking around him mitigates a lot of the issues he showed. And then, you know, outside of a couple of throws that he did miss, legitimately miss, a couple of reads that he did legitimately miss, but a lot of those are just like taking checkdowns, you know, and just instead of looking for the big play, which I think he was doing, he was pressing because the offense was completely stagnant and he was trying to make a play. And like, again, if you give him quality players around him and you can protect him and give him receivers that can get open, like, then you can get him into the mode where he needs to check, where he needs to manage the game. And I think AJ McCarron can do that. He's shown he can do that. He did that in Cincinnati, and was successful there with talent around him. Now, of course, the question is going to be, you're not going to probably have the talent that he had, in 2015 or 2016, whenever that was, in Cincinnati. Like, you're not going to have that level of talent in Atlanta, or at least in theory, you're not going to have that talent. Although, you know, who knows, you know, Kyle Pitts could be AJ Green, right? Peak AJ Green, maybe. Who knows? But, you know, I think AJ McCarron's going to be fine, right? I just think it's people, you know, overreacting to one game. So that's where we'll leave it, guys. Tomorrow's episode, of course, we'll be talking about the takeaways from day one of the joint practice with the Dolphins over the next 2 days. That will be sort of the central focus and sort of gleaning what we can glean. Hopefully the Falcons, you know, will perform better against the Dolphins in the practices than they did against the Titans. But of course, if you have further questions that you want to send in and have them answered on future Q&As, you can do so by hitting me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, on Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. But if your question is where you can get tips on how to make some great bets, you don't have to necessarily wait to the next Q&A. All you have to do is subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, where hosts your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling are giving you those daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite, and Lee's lock of the day. All you got to do is follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.